floor over to you.
Chair Smith, members of the commission, and Director Storr. My name is Richard Tevetin, and I'm the Forest Management Team Lead for Fish and Wildlife. And the reason why I'm here today is to ask your approval for three forest restoration projects. The reason why I'm requesting your approval is any project that is over 1 million board feet, which is about 200 log trucks, requires approval of the commission. One of the things in June of 2014, I came before the commission and presented a forest management strategy, and that was approved by the director last year. And that involves being more aggressive in our forest management. We've undermanaged them, and with the fire suppression and other things, there's a fire deficit and a need to catch up. So since then, we've ramped up from one forester to four foresters. And this year, we've already ramped up. We've got projects in Ponderay, Ferry, Okanagan, Yakima, and Kittitas counties. And next year, we'll be expanding to about nine different counties. Our forest management strategy, the priorities are to maintain and improve ecological integrity, to restore habitat, especially when priority species are involved, and then to reduce risk. And the big thing is severe wildfire, but insects and disease are also a big factor. And using those criteria, the fire-dependent dry forest of eastern Washington, those tend to rank the highest. And that's where we own most of our forests as well. So we have two projects that are proactive. They're in green forests, and they have the same goal, and that is to restore overstocked at-risk forests. And here's an example of the picture from one of them. This is the Methow Wildlife Area, where that picture to the right, that's the historic condition. Between 40 and 70% of the forest used to look like that. Nowadays, only about 3% look like that. A lot of what we have looks like what's on the left, whereas, you know, between 50 and 100 years ago, they logged the old growth, and it with fire suppression, it just came in as really dense young trees. When that happens, you know, the fire behavior is just, it's new and different. It's not what fire used to be on the landscape, and they grow so big and so fast and so dangerous that it just overwhelms our resources and our ability to protect them. Whereas if we get in and manage the forest and come back in with some prescribed fire, I like that picture because you can almost turn your back on it. The other thing with these fires, the effects of them is different. You know, 100 years ago, a fire would just creep through on the grass and it would clean up the forest. And nowadays, these fires, they're not restoring or maintaining the forest like they used to. It just puts it on a completely new trajectory. This is the Wooten 9 years after the school fire. So the Methow project, the plan is we have an RCO grant to do commercial thinning and then prescribed fire. And the plan is to treat 655 acres and harvesting about 3 million board feet off of three units. And they look like that picture I showed you a minute ago. Now, there will be a little bit of road work. There'll be some new spurs, but the idea is when we're done, we'll abandon twice as many roads as we will be upgrading or putting in temporarily. The prescription would be that we leave between 30 and 40 trees per acre, and what we would leave would be the older trees. Any trees that are over about 125 years old, those are the ones that were there before fire suppression came into being. And we leave the larger, more vigorous trees and the irregular ones with broken tops and branch platforms that provide the best habitat. And the focus will be on leaving ponderosa pine trees because those are the ones that are most resilient and resistant to bugs and disease and fire and that kind of thing. And the idea is to it's not going to look like a plantation when we're done. The idea is to restore the historic structure where there's clumps and gaps. And in some cases, we'll leave, you know, a couple acres here and there as a dense patch for, because those were on the landscape historically. It wasn't all just uniform park-like. And we'll be saving snags. moving on to a different project. This is down in the Grouse Flats area. And this one, the trees are of enough value that we don't have to subsidize a project with the grant. The timber revenue will cover the cost of the project. The plan is to do this next year, and the plan is to treat 340 acres, and this also would be about 3 million board feet. The idea is to do some of it would be commercial thinning, but there's other areas where it used to be a wheat field, and pine have reinvaded the wheat field, and they're all small, and that would be a pre-commercial thinning in that area. This would involve putting in 2.8 miles of temporary roads, and then those roads will be abandoned, and the existing roads will be maintained and brought up to better condition than they are now. I've got some photographs of the Grouse Flats one because it's kind of different from the Methow. The prescription is going to be similar. We're going to be leaving 30 to 60 trees per acre, so there's more trees. And the reason for that is these trees have grown pretty large and tall, tight together. And if we were to restore it down to the historic density in one cutting, we'd have a lot of them blowing over. So what we have to do is kind of take it in steps where we'll thin it down, maybe wait 20 or 30 years, and then do the rest, the final thinning to get back to historic range later on. There will also be a patch cut where we have a very severe infestation of mistletoe. And if you look in the picture there, you can kind of see how those Douglas fir tree just don't have the normal growth shape. And that stand is basically just falling apart. Historically, it was probably a ponderosa pine woodland. And when it was logged, you know, way back in the day, without fire suppression, the fir came in. But it's just not sustainable. And the stand is pretty much disintegrating. And this would be an opportunity to get the right species back on the landscape. We would also favor western larch, which is a species that would do better and be more sustainable on that landscape. But the grand fir, which is invaded and moved downslope with fire suppression, would be aggressively thinned out of these stands. Mainly because it just can't handle the drought and the disease, and it also makes fuel ladders, so when the fire comes through, you lose all your what would normally be fire-resistant trees. Here's a look at Grouse Flats from the air, and just the reason for this is just so you can see how much more dense the trees are now than they were 44 years ago. That with prolonged fire exclusion, the trees are just getting thicker and thicker, and it's not sustainable. So here's what it looks like on the ground. To the right, that's where the trees moved into an old wheat field, and that's fine. It's supposed to be forest, but those trees are going to be stunted and very vulnerable. And then the one to the right is or left is a forest that is just coming back from being logged maybe 80 or 100 years ago. Here's a close-up aerial, and if this is from 2012, and I counted the trees on that picture. And 9% of them have died in the last couple years before that picture was taken. And since then, the disease continues to move through this stand because it's supposed to look like the 1971 picture, and it just cannot sustain that many trees. Other thing is just looking at the sustainability and risk for fire. That crosshatched area is the footprint of the Grizzly Complex fire, which came within a mile or a mile and a half of Grouse Flats. And our forester wasn't even allowed to go up there for several weeks. And we thought it was going to burn down before we could do any treatment on it. But fortunately, the fire lines held, so we do have an opportunity to thin it before it burns down. So harvest methods and timing for these two projects, they're flat, relatively flat, so it'd be ground-based. We'd do as much as we possibly could in the winter on snow and frozen ground, but it's not going to be possible that we would do it all that way. We'd probably have to do some summer work as well. And just to kind of help you visualize what these projects would look like, I'm going to show you some photographs of some recent projects. Here's a treated versus non-treated on the Sherman Creek Wildlife Area, where we've treated about 3,000-4,000 acres over the last 7 years. So we're trying to go from that dense overstock condition to more of an open, patchy woodland. And that's going from several hundred trees per acre down to about 35 trees per acre. And that's kind of what the level of the tree density would be in the projects we're proposing. Here's a picture from the Methow. And trying to reduce the competition in the fuels and protect some of those old trees. Here's an example from the Sinlehekin. Very similar prescription to what we're talking about. And Nate Pamplin gave a presentation recently on forest health and treatment strategies, and I'm just going to reiterate a little bit of that. Our forests in eastern Washington are fire-dependent. If you don't have fire in those systems, they veer off in a direction that's not natural, it's not sustainable. And with the century of fire suppression, we just have a huge fire deficit out there. And then that's complicated with the reduced infrastructure and industry in eastern Washington, that there's just not much harvesting going on. The trees, and then you compound that with the drought and climate change, you get insects and disease coming in, and then we get these huge fires, and then people are upset with us because we did nothing to in our management to prevent that from happening. So what we want are nice, healthy forests where we're going in. And if nature's not allowed to have the natural disturbance regime, then we need to do the best we can to come in and offset the impacts of the lack of that regime. And it's not just for wildlife. It's also for protecting communities and the life of firefighters. So here's a couple photos of this year's fire impacts on the Sinlehekin Wildlife Area. Where we have really dense forests in these dry, fire-dependent communities, the fire tends to come through and just take out everything, unlike it used to 100 years ago. But if we actively manage it, we can turn things around. Here's a before and after treatment pictures on the Sinlehekin Wildlife Area. A very dense stand. We thinned it in 2012. We did prescribed fire in 2013. And the picture on the left shows that area in the spring of this year. And the picture on the right shows it after the Okanagan Complex wildfire came through, which is the biggest, most destructive fire in state history. And these units actually stopped the fire from moving further north and burning the north half of the Sinlehekin Wildlife Area. And as you can see, it didn't stop the fire from burning. The fire still went through, but all it did was singe the grass. It didn't kill the trees. It didn't even burn up the logs that were on the ground. It's just a totally different dynamic if you actively manage the forest. Unfortunately, the southern half of the Sinlehekin Wildlife Area did burn, as along with almost all of the Scotch Creek Wildlife Area. And so we have proposed a project to do some thinning work in the Sinlehekin Wildlife Area and the Scotch Creek Wildlife Area. And more than 5,000 acres burned on those two wildlife areas. And sadly, some of those areas, we'd previously thinned them and treated them with prescribed fire, and they did fine. But there are other areas where we hadn't got to them, or we commercially thinned them and hadn't had a chance to apply prescribed fire yet. and those areas burn very hot. So I have on the slide here that we hope to treat 400 acres, but in the last few weeks we've revised that down to about 300 acres. And so the plan is to come in and do some more restoration work in those areas, because the fires under these conditions don't really restore everything. In some places they do, and we don't propose to do anything in those areas, but in some places they just take an overstocked forest with way too much fuel that's way out of whack and turn it from a green overstocked forest to a black overstocked forest, but you have all the same problems with too many fuels and that kind of thing. So there's a lot of challenges with doing work in a burnt forest. I don't like doing it. It's a tremendous amount of effort. And the big thing, one of the big things, it's the worst possible market conditions you could want to deal with. The burnt wood is worth less. The mills won't take it for pulp. You get charcoal in it, you can't make paper out of it. And it's a race against the beetles. There's a glut right now where about 300 million board feet of pine is flooding the mills, where people are trying to harvest that before the beetles or rot and fungus get to it. And with that, there's a shortage of contractors, and they, of course, their prices go up. And if we're trying to get the wood out, we're racing against private industry and tribes that don't have a lot of the same restrictions, and they can move a lot faster. And the big thing is, if you go in a green forest, you can write your prescription and you can pick exactly what trees you want and what clumps you want where. In a black forest, the best you can do is look at what's left and work with what you've got. And of course, there's also increased risk with in a disturbed environment. It's more susceptible to things like erosion and that kind of stuff. And then there's all kinds of potential social concerns. Some people, want you to cut everything down and capture the value of the timber and jobs and that kind of stuff. And there's other people at the other end of the spectrum who don't want you to do anything. So, but I think the truth is somewhere in the middle, and that there are things we should do and there are things we shouldn't do. And this project would be treating, maybe 6 or 7% of the 300 out of 5,000 acres. And it's areas where we believe it's the right thing to do, and areas with lower risk. So the funding would be an RCO grant. This is an area where we had an RCO grant already in place, and it was to do thinning and prescribed fire. And basically, the fire beat us to it. So what we need to do is do some of that thinning kind of retroactively, and also pile up and burn a lot of those fuels that the fire didn't get. Fires don't burn up everything. They blacken it all, but there's still a lot of fuel out there. Now, the timber volume here is less than 3.2 million board feet. When it was cruised, that's how much wood's out there, but we've already scaled it from 400 acres down to 300 acres. And the other thing is, with the glut in pine going to the mills, it's possible that the mills will simply tell us, we don't want your pine, we've already got more than we can handle. In that case, we wouldn't be able to treat the pine, which would drop it down to about 600 to 800,000 board foot project. But I wanted to ask the commission the approval for the full amount in case they are willing to take it. And there is a risk that the project will, nobody will want it because the mills are overwhelmed. But the other thing is, it could be scaled back if the beetles beat us to the wood. In 2014, after the Carlton Complex fire, we got approval to do a 160-acre restoration thinning project on the Metau. And we got about 100 acres done before the beetles beat us to it. So we quit at 100 acres. So this very well could be shrinking as we go. Roads, there's minimal work anticipated because these are areas where the Sinlahecans got a large history of active management, and there's plenty of roads there. So the restoration goals on this project are somewhat different because it's already burned, but we're still working on the main three things: improve ecological integrity, restore habitat, and reduce risk. It's black wood, but we still have way too much wood out there, and it will still, if it burns again, it will cause an even greater shift away from the historic ranges. So we want to get off as much of that biomass as we can, and we know we can't take off as much as should be taken off, but at least we can get ourselves a little closer to historic range. And we want to restore that species composition wherever possible. So it didn't burn everything everywhere black like the picture, the example picture. There's some areas where there's pockets that didn't burn too hot. And in some cases, it's all the wrong tree species. We've got a tree from a higher, cooler elevation like Doug Fir that came in and it's crowding out the pine. We'd like to thin them away from that pine. And then we've got all kinds of hazard trees up and along the roads and in the campsites that we need to address, and if we address them before they lose all their value, it can kind of subsidize their own removal. As if we wait a year or two, it's just we have to find more money to get it done. Now the prescription here in the areas that are totally black would leave about 5 or 10 trees per acre. And in that Sinlehequin Valley, it's really hot and dry down there, and it historically didn't have a lot of trees. In the areas that didn't burn that hot, the idea is to leave 15 to 25 trees. And that's in the range of normal or even a little high for some of these areas. Dale Swedberg has photographs from 1910, and the Sinlehequin did not have nearly as many trees 100 years ago as it does now. The leave tree characteristics, the idea is to leave the trees that are alive and the ones that are most likely to survive. We want nice, big, irregular trees, and we want to favor pine, because that's more resilient in this landscape. We want it all patchy and clumpy, but the fire's kind of decided what those patches and clumps are going to look like for us. And of course, we want to leave snags, and there's a lot of them on the landscape. But we may end up leaving all the pine, which would be way above the historic range of variability. And we're going to be leaving a lot of trees that we think might live, but they'll probably die anyways. And then along the roads, we can reach up and chop the trees off 10 feet above the ground, so those are still a snag. Whereas if we wait a few years, you have to cut them at the ground because you can't afford to bring in the equipment. So here's a picture of a similar project to what we're thinking of doing on the Sinlehequin. Here's the Carlton Complex fire, where we had several hundred dead trees per acre, and we thinned it down to what would look like a more resilient stand with a lot fewer trees per acre that was more kind of closely aligned to historic conditions. So those are the three projects that we're asking approval on this in the coming year.
Thank you, Richard. Very informative. Questions from the commission?
I guess from a low to a high for me, because I always, when you made your presentation here a year or so ago, everybody, when I go home, they say, oh, the game department needs to do some work on the ground. I go, they got him a guy. He knows what he's doing. And what Richard said about the glut of pine is a real deal. And we were over there that night at the Grizzly Bear fire, blew up from 12 acres to 44,000 in about 12 hours, and I wouldn't give you a plug nickel for your chunk of ground there on Grouse Flats. That's the only thing that I, you know, on the Grouse Flats is how quick you're going to log it, because the mills are just glutted with logs right now.
Well, the good thing about Grouse Flats is it's not burnt, so we can time the market.
And that's where I would say, yeah, if you put some time on a contract, because like the mill I generally take off that Grizzly Bear fire, they figure there's 10 million feet. Well, the mill only cuts 13 a year, and they're buried already. So what they're going to do with a whole bunch of the pine? But no, if a guy could set on that a little bit, you'll have a market in a year or so, because that would wash through. But no, what he's saying, I couldn't endorse anymore. He's spot on what he's talking about doing.
Questions?
Say the same thing. I thought your presentation was very, very clear, really nicely done. Can't argue with any of the points you made. All makes sense to me. And I was, as you were talking, I was thinking about how former Commissioner Chuck Perry would be so pleased to hear that we've hired some new foresters, because we haven't had the luxury, perhaps, or put the focus on habitat improvement, stand management, active management, that we would all desire. So it's good. Good trend. Thanks.
Also, thank you very much for a great presentation. I have a several-part question. The examples that you showed, Sherman Creek and the others, was that a combination of logging and controlled burn, or different on the different plots?
Yeah, the Sherman Creek, there's been a lot of commercial thinning on Sherman Creek since 2007. And over the last 2 years, prescribed fire has been ramping up. And several hundred acres has been burned on Sherman Creek. But there's still a couple thousand acres that's been thinned but has not yet been treated with prescribed fire. But we did get some, in this last budget, we got some capital forest health funding. And we plan on spending over half of it doing prescribed fire on Sherman Creek. Because even if you, you know, thin the trees and you pile up the slash and you burn it, if you have 100 years worth of duff, you could still lose all the trees. Even when it looks so much nicer, it's not fully restored yet. So.
And then you mentioned there will be prescribed burn on the Metau on grass flats as well?
There will be prescribed fire on the Metau. That's funded by the RCO grant. On the grouse flats, we'd like to, and there may be enough revenue from the timber value to do that. The problem is we kind of temporarily have lost our prescribed fire team, and we're kind of ramping back up to do that. And that forest health grant money will go a long ways to do that. But between the work they have to do on the Sinlahecan and Sherman Creek and the Metau, I'm not sure if we'll be able to get them down there. It's so much further away, and logistics. There's no water sources and all that kind of stuff. I don't know if we're able to do it. So if we can't, we'll do our best to pile up and burn those fuels. And reduce them, but I hate to promise that we're going to do prescribed fire there just yet.
And then my final question is, are there public concerns about prescribed burns, or is that pretty acceptable, generally speaking?
There's people who have health concerns and stuff like that about smoke, but DNR is pretty strict in enforcing their permitting for that. I'm not aware of cases where the public has just been an obstacle because of their concerns and trying to stop projects. When projects are done the year later, they're very happy with the results. But I haven't seen a lot of public concern, or really one way or another, about the prescribed fire stuff, at least for us.
Even on that, on the grouse flats unit, by the time you go in there and address those dog hair patches, and the rest of it will be mechanically logged, you shouldn't have much of a... You should be able to pretty well treat all your slash that way, shouldn't you?
We'll be able to treat a lot of slash, yes. It's just all that accumulated duff that you can't mechanically treat.
Well,
fire's the only way to really
log it
up proper.
Summer, it'll stir it up pretty good, too.
It helps.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Thanks again. I'm echoing a lot of what's being said here. There's a lot of forest that needs to be get the kind of treatment you've just described here today. Clay, you're at a presentation about the Stimelt Basin, and that was one of the concerns there. The community forest management of that really needs the kind of applications you've described here today. Just in our region, there's something like 400,000 acres that needs to have this kind of treatment.
I've seen things put together by the Forest Service and the Nature Conservancy, where they're saying more like 3 million acres.
Well, I'm just talking about in my region.
What is your
Well, I'm in the Wenatchee area.
Okay.
So, you know, Wenatchee forests.
Okay.
And I think that's just within the department-owned properties and DNR possibly, too. So I'm very much encouraged to see the work that's being done there. I'm familiar with the Matt Howe and Scotch Creek, and there's an awful lot of work to be done out there, and I'm glad to see the department taking steps to do that.
Thanks.
Yes, Clay.
Can I just add something?
Yep. Sure.
Thank you. I'm Clay Sprague, Lands Division Manager. Just as to that last point, Richard's been and I've been doing some work at how many acres of at-risk forest we have remaining. And of our 200,000 acres of forest land, at least half, 100,000, is at risk and needs treatment like Richard's been talking about. So we're working at some numbers and strategies right now that suggest we should be treating 10,000 acres a year over 10 years to try to catch up with that backlog. And then we should be burning 7,000 acres a year thereafter to maintain it. So we're working on some budget numbers, hope to share that with the legislature, but I think you're right. The future says that we should be ramping up much more than we're doing. This is a great start. I think, as Richard said, the 800,000 that we got for forest health in the legislature was a great start, but we need a lot more to reduce this risk.
Yeah, I've even heard that probably ideally we should be doing 20,000 acres a year. And I don't know if that number make you've heard that or not. But.
Well, I've heard we should do it as fast as we can. And so as we think about what it takes to ramp up, particularly with prescribed fire, as Richard mentioned, we need a crew that's sustainable, that gets experienced, and then they can ramp up the amount they can do. But when you're living on soft money like grants and such, it's hard to maintain that kind of expertise. So that's another thing that we're trying to address. So we'd love to do 20,000 acres a year, but I think the 10,000 acres a year is what's realistic for us to ramp up to.
Well, and you've explained why we're not hitting higher numbers, too, because of the grant situation.
Yep.
Yeah.
Yep.
Okay.
Thank you.
Yes.
Is that an export market now, or is that?
We're not allowed to export lumber from state lands. It has to go to local mills. There's passed in the 90s was a rule on that.
I was thinking the finished product, whatever it is.
Most of it is used in magic. The problem of it is, like you said, the undersized normal, when it's green timber, you can take it down to that big.
Problem is once a forest burns, those logs are devalued too. So it really, when you have a stand burn, you can correct me on this, but I mean you can be looking at 50% loss of value fairly quickly.
Yeah, good 40%.
Yeah.
I have a quick question. Are your new foresters full time permanents? Are they supported on soft money?
Three out of the four foresters are full-time permanent. One of them, the one that's working on the Sinlahekan and the Methow, is funded with grants. And so she's a project employee. So,
okay.
But she's really good. We'd love to get her permanent.
Do you have an adequate number of foresters at this point?
If we were going to treat 10,000 acres a year, like Clay had mentioned, we need to double that to about 8 foresters. But we'd also need money for them to treat a lot of forests that won't pay for themselves. So being that we don't have a bunch of extra money to pay for the projects that won't pay for themselves, 4 is probably a pretty good number for right now.
Thank you again.
Thank you.